Artist, you are on day 5. Can you believe it? We're clear past the halfway point of the Smartest Telesummit 2007. And today we will have Molly Gordon and Steve White in the first hour and a half, then our 15-minute break, and another round with Alita DeWall. But before we roll, we want to offer thanks to ArtSpan.com and ArtExchange.com, our sponsors. They provide website space for artists to showcase their work. Check them out. See if it makes sense for your career path. So Smartest Day 5, and what better way to start out than with a smart-talking, straight-shooting, sweet and sassy Molly Gordon, who is not afraid of putting her heart into all she does. You can sample her work and subscribe to her Enlightened E-Zine for Accidental Entrepreneurs. And that, I believe, is all of us on this call today. It's at AuthenticPromotion.com, all one word, AuthenticPromotion.com. Hi, Molly.
Hi there.
I'm glad you're here.
I bet you are.
You're okay, I take it.
I'm fine. I somehow had Thursday and Friday down, and I guess we're Wednesday and Thursday, so.
All right. Well, I'm glad you were there, not out having a cappuccino somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. So am I.
So would you like me back to open up for questions toward the end?
Sure. And I just want to double check because I had these dates switched, which of my two sessions I'm doing here.
This is Wednesday. So you're doing your session on the vision. Let me see. It's not the 5 3/4 keys. That's tomorrow.
It would be the three inescapable laws.
That's the one.
Good. Thank you. I thought it might be helpful for people if I talked about what they expected.
I'm so glad you're an old hat at this because I know it's not going to throw you.
No problem.
All right. So how close to the end would you like me to pop back in? We've got about 8 minutes into the session already.
Yeah. Let's do 5, and I'm happy to also answer questions by email.
Okay, great. All right. It's all yours, Molly. Take it away.
Okay, great. Well, hello, everyone, and I do apologize for throwing this off. And it occurs to me that in your careers as artists, that you're no stranger to surprise turns. So perhaps we'll even be able to weave this glitch into our topic today. I'd like to begin with the quote from Peter London that's on your mind map. The end of art is not art, but communication, or better still, communion. Breaking out of the solitariness and silence of one dimension of ourselves and making contact with the other. When it comes to selling art, we are always talking about communication, communion, relationship. You don't sell to yourself. So selling is always about relationship. And that is the first law, inescapable law of selling. Too often, whether you're an artist or a dentist or a convenience store owner, we think of the customer or buyer as an other that is almost alien. In order to have a relationship, we have to know who this other that we're going to relate to is. We also have to know who we are. You know, who are you in this relationship? And then the corollary of exchange. So the three facets of this law we'll look at this morning or this afternoon, depending on where you are, is who are you in this relationship? Who are the buyers in this relationship? And what is the exchange? And what roles do each of you have in this exchange? So it may seem obvious to you who you are, and it might seem obvious to you that you're present in this relationship of selling, and I'm going to propose that's not always true. If you're entering into selling your art from a place of feeling victimized or disempowered, or resentful, or invisible, you are not in the fullest sense showing up. Now, there's all kinds of good reasons why you might feel victimized or disempowered or disengaged or resentful, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not inviting you to criticize yourself when that happens. I'm just asking you to notice and acknowledge that you are not fully in a relationship when that's going on. So the first thing you have to do to establish relationship is become present. Become present to yourself first as a human being. You're a person. You've got feelings. So you're going to want to take steps to deal with them. You're doing that in part by taking this Smartest Telesummit. You may do it by hanging out with your buddies in the art world, by getting support from family, friends, from patrons, buyers, gallery owners, teachers, people who can support you in the arts. You are an economic being. This means that you probably don't live out of the back of your van. Even if you do, you're an economic being. You live in a culture where laws of the economy govern the flow of goods and services. What I'm trying to say is you have a right and responsibility to make a living. You are most likely a family member or a member of various communities, and there are numerous other aspects to who you are. All of this comes in to who you are in the selling relationship. You are also an artist. But notice that being an artist is only one factor of who you are. And if you enter into relationship to sell your work as an artist only, you're going to experience over and over that horrible sense of vulnerability, exposure, disempowerment, and sometimes resentment. When you bring the rest of you to the relationship, I think you will find that you're much more powerful. You're also going to find, when you bring the rest of you to the relationship, that you are more present to who they are. You're a human being. They are a human being. You're an economic being. They are economic beings. And let's take a look at that. You know, other economic beings make economic decisions for reasons that have nothing to do with you and your art. When you really understand this, you will be free from that feeling that money defines your value as an artist. It doesn't. Money describes the value of a piece of work at a specific moment in time, at a specific space, a place in space, in a specific market setting. It does not define the value of the work absolutely in terms of its artistic meaning or value, in terms of its spiritual value, in terms of its personal value. Money does not have anything to do with the aesthetic value of a piece of art. Money describes the economic value of a piece of art at a specific point in time and space in a specific market setting. It's not about you. And in many ways, it's not about your work in the way you may think about your work. Who are they? They may be artists. They may not be artists. This has something to do with how they're going to experience the meaning and value of your work. And we'll look at this more when we get to the other two laws, the law of value and the law of accessibility. They also are family members. Excuse me, and workers, and have other roles in the world. And when you understand this, you will be able to see that the choices they make about your work are not about you. As soon as you define someone else's choice as about you, you are taking them hostage. And they're going to behave like most hostages behave, sullen, disengaged, and pretty hard to get along with. They're not likely to whip out their checkbooks. So this sense of humanity, although it may seem obvious, is far from trivial. Excuse me. Then there's the exchange. In any relationship, exchanges happen according to different rules or traditions. In the exchange for art, your part and their part and the money are the main factors. Your part is to set a price with the help usually of a curator or a gallery owner or some other advisor. Your part is to do your work, present your work, put it on display or make it available, and then your part is to let go. You make your offer and you let go of the result. The other party's part is to respond. Money, as your mind map I have, it's about the money and it's not about the money. The exchange, of course, is about the money because money is the mechanical vehicle through which we carry value from one person to another. The buyer takes away your piece of art, you take away their money, and then you use the money to buy somebody else's work or to buy groceries or whatever. So, of course, it's absolutely about the money in the sense that the exchange doesn't happen without it. And it's not about the money in that what's really being exchanged is value, the value that the buyer places on your work of art and how that measures up against all the other choices they need to make in their life. This will become clearer, I expect, when we look at the law of value in just a minute. So in relationship, what's often missing in art business is clarity about where you begin and end, where your work begins and ends, and where the buyer begins and ends. That all gets muddied up, and you can feel like the buyer's making a decision about your personal value. This is why it's so important in the exchange that what you put out there, you let go of once you put it out. So let's look at the law of accessibility. You can't sell it if it's under your couch. You can't sell it if it's in your garage. These are a couple of corollaries of the law of accessibility. But even more, it's about where are you? Where is your work? Where will people find you? How will they find you? And I made this little note. You're not the only one who feels marginalized. So many people, when they go by an art gallery or a museum or a craft fair, feel marginalized. They feel excluded from the private language and culture of art. They feel that it's not enough to know what they like. You know, that old saw, I don't know if it's art, but I know what I like. They feel embarrassed because maybe their true response to Jackson Pollock is, I don't get it. My three-year-old can do that. When we're not making fun of these responses, when we allow these people to be human beings, we might notice that it's hard to appreciate and buy something if you're on the margins. So when it comes to making yourself accessible to people, consider that the other party can feel just as marginalized as you do. And if you're the one wanting to make a sale, to present your work, to open the conversation, to open the communication, it's incumbent upon you to make yourself accessible. So often artists can feel, and I speak from my own experience as a fiber artist, sometimes I just felt like I did not want to talk about my work. I did not want to ask any more questions about where my inspirations come from, how much time it took me, how much my materials cost, yada, yada, yada. And yet, it is the business of the buyer to ask because they don't know. They're not living what we're living day in and day out. One way we make ourselves and our work accessible is by opening to the questions that may seem boring and tedious and repetitive to us. and by generously answering them. And there's some ways to do this that are under elements of access. If you find that you're often fielding questions that get irritating or repetitive, create some information sheets. Hand them out with a smile. Say, you know, I get so many questions about that that I have written up this little outline about my work or this description of my work. I'd love to give it to you. And after you've read it, if you have any other questions, you know. So create some systems that support you in meeting the needs of the other party without depleting you as an artist. Pedestals and pits. We can put ourselves and our art on a pedestal, or we can put ourselves and our art in a pit, feeling sorry for ourselves. Both, I hold, are defenses against connecting with someone who could have an emotional or financial impact on us. So be aware of the temptation to either stand above or place yourself below your customer or the buyer. How would it be to do the business of art at what I call street level, where everyone brings themselves just the way they are to the encounter, and it's about communication? The person who's looking at your art, buying your art, learning about your art, doesn't need to know more than they know. They can bring their questions. You don't have to be any better a businessman than you are, provided you bring your questions and your requests to the table. So access is about communication. It's about letting people in to who you are as an artist, to what you do, to what you need from them in order to share your work. There are other elements of access, and I wrote a few of these on the mind map, but I'd like you to jot some down too. Notice what things get in the way when you're preparing for a show or a studio visit or to ship work for a gallery, any of the ways that you typically bring your work into the marketplace. What are the points of irritation, frustration, alienation? And then instead of regarding them as barriers, turn it around and create them as criteria for access. So, for example, I often talk to artists who have arrangements with galleries where insurance and shipping are considerations. And the artists will come saying, they haven't made any arrangements about insurance. And I'll say, well, have you asked? Rather than taking things that are concerns to you and turning them into problems, turn them into requests. Decide before you talk to a gallery, make a list of the things that have to be covered, pricing, payment terms. Is the gallery going to be empowered to do any negotiation? If a patron wants to buy two or three pieces, can the gallery make some allowances on price of the total piece? Can they negotiate for you? If so, how does that affect their commission? What percent do you expect to get from the retail price of your work of art? Rather than going in and feeling victimized when a gallery says we have a 70-30 or a 50-50 split on pieces that we take on consignment, know for yourself what you want and why you want it, and under what circumstances you'd be willing to vary that. So this is not about drawing a line in the sand and say, I never take less than 50% for my piece. But it's knowing that I ask for 50% for my pieces, and if the gallery is going to take 60, I need to know how I'm going to make up that other 10%. Is it superior exposure? Is it the particular group of people that this gallery can put me in front of? Is it that in this particular market, the prices overall can be set quite a bit higher, and so I'm going to take away the same amount of money? Is it that I would give my eye teeth to show with the three other people in this show? be clear so that the choice you make is made out of an authentic feeling of having been fully compensated and not a negative compromise. Sometimes it's worth going into a show for the pure experience of learning to show. If you're new in your career, you may be willing to take to show in smaller or less prestigious venues or to make smaller commissions because you're getting the business education and the marketing education, and there's no shame in that. You know, people spend tens of thousands of dollars a year for a Harvard MBA. As an artist, you're going to get your MBA in trade. And I would invite you to collect that. It's really important compensation. The artist statement is a very important and powerful aspect of access. And, of course, Ariane has written a whole book about it. And at my websites, authenticpromotion.com and mollygordon.com, in the resources sections, there is a briefer process for writing artist statements that many people have found very effective. I see the artist statement as the doorknob, the invitation into your work. Sometimes artists write statements that seem designed to keep people away. And actually, in some settings, this may be perfectly appropriate. If you're showing in a Tony Manhattan Art Gallery and it's all about using the latest in art jargon, well, then go for it. But for most of us and most of your buyers, the artist statement wants to be more intimate. Write in the language that they can understand and language that comes from your heart. Why do you do this? What do you care about? What are the stakes for you? What is juicy for you in this? What are the risks for you in this? And what's the human story behind your art? Writing an artist statement and making it freely available is one of the kindest things you can do for the person who's buying or viewing, and for yourself. It can be the core of this communication. Sometimes artists resist this, saying, I want my work to speak for itself. Well, that's nice, but turn on the phonograph, please. You know, the artist statement is like turning up the volume, letting people hear it. A good artist statement will never trump or obscure your work. It will only invite people in where then they can engage and have an enriching conversation with your work. So let's move to the law of value. This is really important, and this is a sticking point for so many of us in selling. We take prices and the act of selling very personally often. And again, I'd invite you to put yourself in the other person's shoes first. Nobody wants to make a bad decision buying anything, and nobody wants to make a bad decision buying art. So you or the gallery owner or the store or shop or show that you're working with, please put effort in to helping your customer get over the fear of looking foolish. Acknowledge that for some people, the choice is between buying art or feeding their children or getting a new car. And if your audience is an audience that's buying art as an investment, give them the information and context they need to make an investment. You know, get representatives, be able to have an intelligent conversation about the market value of your work and of similar work, or have a rep or a gallery that represents you who can have that conversation. This does not demean your art. This is simply a necessary part of giving the people who want to invest in it the information they need. When you're clear about how to help people make wise buying choices, you're also equipping those people who appreciate your work and are not the perfect buyer to enjoy your work and carry the message. By not pressuring them to buy and by not embarrassing them, for not being in the market for the work, but generously allowing them to enjoy it, they become advocates. They've been invited in. They've been included in the circle of your work. And now they can speak about your work with all the enjoyment and passion and excitement of someone who's on the inside. And that will communicate over time to other people who do have the money. You know, none of us do this for the money, and most of us need money to do it. So we never want to reduce people in our audience to dollar signs. And the clearer we are about the price that needs to be paid for an exchange, and the more we can let go of how that happens, the freer everyone is to enjoy our work. There's a real paradox in this, and so I invite you to go back and listen to this session and even slow it down, because I'm throwing a lot of pretty intricate conceptual material at you. Listen to a bit, notice where you push back, and write down your pushback, write down your arguments and your questions, and email them to me. You can send them to me, care of Ariane, if you like, if that's her preference. I would be happy to answer them and make them available through Smartest. Your job is to know the value of your work. Most likely you know the intrinsic value of your work, but it is also your job to know the economic value of your work, and that is set in the marketplace. So go to shows, read the art mags, talk to other artists, talk to professionals, and do it from the perspective of learning, so that you can become educated in how to set the economic value of your work. The economic value of your work is not personal. It's interpersonal. It is not about you. It's about the marketplace where everyone around your work meets. When you learn the economic value of your work, you will also be learning where to position your work so that it reaches the right person at the right price. This goes back to the law of accessibility. All of these laws are interrelated. It's your job to distinguish between the economic value of your work, the artistic value of your work, and the value of you as a human being and an artist. These cannot be equated, or you're going to burn out. Even if you were to wildly succeed, you will burn out because you'll feel like you're selling your soul. So whether you expect or are experiencing great economic success or having a difficult time initially selling your work, if you fail to distinguish between your personal value, your value as an artist, and the economic value of the artwork, you will burn out. So please take the time every day to acknowledge yourself as a human being, to connect with yourself as an artist, and then to notice your work as a separate entity. And then finally, it is your job. It is part of your job as an artist to promote your work. There are many other sessions in the Smartest Summit that will show you how to do this. The point I want to make today is that if your work is going to have value in the marketplace, and if it's going to have value as a means of communication in the community of the human beings, you must teach, demonstrate, understand, and make understandable your work. You must promote it, move it out into the world, and be an advocate for it. So I think, Ariane, I don't know if you're back yet.
I am, my dear. And Molly, thank you. That was really full. I have a question I forgot to post because of our little, confusion in the beginning. But one of the participants said that she could not print out the mind map because it was too big to fit on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper and didn't know how to resize it.
Usually inside a printer dialog box, there is something to do that. If you open it in Adobe Reader, let me see. Most printers, in my experience, most printers or readers will automatically resize it. My print dialog box says page scaling, reduce to printer margins.
And you can go up to format as another option, and it will say format document.
Yes.
And you can also use that to resize.
Right.
And if you have a Word, you know, or something else, excuse me, I'm having the same trouble you are with my throat.
Right. There is also in page setup, there may be options there for, depending on your printer and your software, often there's a little place to put scale, and you can play with different scales.
Okay, great. All right, Molly, I'm going to open up the lines for questions. Hang on. Okay, artists, if you want to ask a question, unmute yourself with *6. Tell me your name so I can acknowledge you, and then you'll know I hear you.
This is Sheila.
Yes, Sharon?
The real simple answer to that just question that I found, I had scaling and everything, was just in page setup, I changed the page to horizontal and reprinted, and it comes out fine in the horizontal setup.
Thank you very much for that information. Okay, you can *6 yourself back again. And another artist, would you like to speak and ask Molly a question? I can't hear anybody, so if you're trying to ask a question, you might want to hit *6. Hello, is somebody there?
Yeah, this is Reeve Nestor in San Francisco.
Hi, Reeve. Yes, go ahead.
Yes, hi, Molly. The question, and thank you, great information. A lot of things really hit me, so thank you. And listen to it again. But you were talking about the economic value of the artwork and to go out and check other art to see what's comparable.
Mm-hmm.
But my question about that is part of my work is bronze. And
yeah.
Because the expense of the bronze is so much, it's mm-hmm. a very difficult thing for me to know how to price. But to compare it to other artists is difficult because it's how do you deal with the part that that artist is either shown less than you or more than you, and how does
right.
that value?
What I've always done for pricing is part science and part art. You know, I triangulate. I look at the marketplace in general. I look, for one thing, I'm not going to sell something for less than it costs me to make it, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
There's always a cost-plus formula. And I also check in with myself, you know, what in my heart can I do and not do? This is where it's very helpful for an
Molly,
artist.
Hang on a second.
Yeah.
I'm going to put you back on 5 to talk because of the background noise. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. It's helpful and almost necessary to be able to price your art without needing to sell it right now if it's fine art. In the craft arts, most of us have more leeway for pricing things at various levels so we can create cash flow, whether bigger pieces are selling or not. And in your work, I don't know what your opportunities may be, whether it's miniatures or posters, but I would explore ways to create cash flow that doesn't depend on the big bronze. And I would always do at least 3 things for pricing. I'd look into the marketplace for comparables, and comparable would imply people with a similar amount of experience in a similar market. And you may not be able to find, it's like appraising houses. You might not find a perfect comparable. You might have to go across the country to find artists with the same amount of experience, the same scale, the same sort of buyer profile, and that particular marketplace might be skewed higher or lower than your own. So it's science and art. Always figure out your costs and have some minimum formula for your labor. And Carol Michaels suggests you look at what you would do if you had a day job or if you do have a day job. If you're driving a cab and making $20 an hour, you figure your time making art at $20 an hour. This is not, it's not prestigious, it's not fairy tale, but it works. And you add that cost to the cost of your materials and overhead. And then, of course, you have to add whatever a gallery would cost. And then finally, you do the gut check. I like to write down a price and sleep on it and just see how it feels. Say the price a few times to somebody and let that tell me. So does that help, Reed?
Okay, go ahead. You can answer her now.
Yes, that does. Thank you very much. I'll take that. That is much of what I've been thinking about, but so many, I get caught up in the place where the people who know my work say you cannot take it down to that price. It's worth so much more. You can't do that.
Yeah.
But I want it out in the world.
Right.
And I would like
you're the authority.
Right.
You know, I would say that I love that you feel that way, and, you know, anytime you want me to write me a check for that, I'm here.
Exactly. Okay, thank you. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
All right. We have time to take a couple more questions. Is there someone else who would like to ask Molly a question? You need to *6 to unmute yourself. Say your name so I can acknowledge you. Is there anyone else out there who would like to ask a question? I'm not hearing anything.
Right, I've stunned
Sabrina.
Everyone.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, who's speaking, please?
This is Rena.
Rena, go ahead.
Hi. My question is how to, well, I don't have a big body of work, but the quality of my work really does stand up to people who do have big bodies of work and charge very high prices.
Mm-hmm.
So my gut says it's okay for me to charge those prices
mm-hmm.
and feel great about it. But I wondered, am I missing some point in reality here?
I don't know. If you don't have a big body of work, it tells me it's a scarce commodity and demands a high price. So I don't necessarily see where the size of the body of the work would affect the price. Except if it means that you're unknown, and so people don't know how to compare it to anyone else. Can you say a little more?
What I do is commission portraiture.
Okay. So you don't have a big track record.
Right.
Yeah. That just feels a little different in pricing terms than the size of your body of work. You know, it's all about how you can position yourself.
Okay.
And also how long you can afford to wait between purchases.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and it's entirely up to you. You have the right to charge whatever you want. And it only makes sense to charge what will also work for your life circumstances. And truly, if you'd rather do 4 portraits a year for a very high sum of money versus 1 a month for less, do it the way you want to and the way makes you feel good and that allows you to do the best possible job for the person who's commissioning the portrait.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does someone else have a question they would like to ask Molly? We can take one more.
Yes, this is David.
Yes, go ahead.
How do you deal with the gallery issue of pricing when the gallery itself prices it at such a high that they don't sell it? How do you go back to them? I find it really tricky and telling them, you priced it, but it's too high and you're not moving anything.
Yeah. Well, in that case, I would think that I might be in the wrong gallery. Or I would just trust and take more time. I really believe in trusting the gallery to know their clientele and their market. So, personally, I would find it not terribly helpful to argue with the gallery. You might ask. You say, would it be smarter to price it less? But more likely, I would let it be there. Let it establish that you're worth that in that marketplace and look for galleries in a different geographic area
and play with a slightly different price point. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. I agree that some of those galleries, I just shouldn't be there.
Yeah. Very often it's just not the, you know.
Not the right gallery.
Yeah, just not the right gallery. And that's okay. You just want to keep looking.
Yep.
Okay, great.
Well,
thank you. Thank you so much, Molly. I'm going to put us back on star 5. Hold on.
Okay.
Oh, I'm just delighted. And tomorrow you're going to be back with us again at the same time, just a couple minutes earlier.
Yes, earlier.
And until then, my dear, enjoy the life.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye. Hi, Steve. Are you with us?
Yes, I am. Hi, Ariane. How are
Hi.
you?
Hi. Oh, good day to you. Artists, you can find out more about what Steve is up to at growthcommunications.com. That's all together, growthcommunications.com. He has worked with artists and art organization, and he helps Jeffrey Gorman out with his artistcube.com website. So he is no stranger to how artists think and the struggles we're up against when dealing with technology. Steve, listen, how would you like to handle questions today? Do you want me back at the end to open the lines for you?
Yeah, I'm. You know, in some ways, I look at this list that I'm going to go through with everybody, and I'm not sure how much time there will be at the end. I'll try to go through it pretty quickly. I mean, it'd be nice if we had as much as 15 minutes for questions, but I know Molly didn't seem to have a whole lot of questions. So, but I think this topic tends to get more specific, detailed questions.
Okay, so we'll see what kind of time we have, and if we don't have it today, are you okay with emailing you? Within a limited amount of time.
Yeah, really quick. I think so. And do you have a way of posting answers on your site or something like that?
We don't have a form up yet, but we are absolutely working on it. So we're getting back to that. But I will make sure I will forward things to you, and then we can work through there. And if it works for you, great. And if it doesn't, we'll figure out another way.
Okay, great.
All right. Okay, Steve, I'm going to let you take it away.
Okay. Well, the title of this program is 7 Reasons Why Your Website Is a Waste of Money and How to Fix It Today, which sounds kind of provocative, I hope, anyway. But the idea is, if your site isn't working for you and you're paying money, it's a waste of money. And so I'm going to go through these general categories. We can't really drill down a whole lot on a lot of the details, but maybe some of that will come up in the questions. But the 7 areas I want to cover are design, showing your work, your website traffic, selling from your site, creating next steps, getting people to return to your site, and the costs of your site. Okay, now what I have found, and even what I've heard in the conference so far, is probably if you're interested in websites, you've probably been overwhelmed by the amount of information out there. So I want to encourage people to as you listen to what I'm saying, try to pick the things that you think you can actually act on and do. I may give you 30, 40, 50 recommendations. If you acted on 2 or 3 of those, I would consider that a success. And you can't expect yourself to do all of the technical things that are out there. And I don't even do that, and I have success on the web. Okay, let's go through these one by one. Let's talk about design first. How can your website be a waste of money with design? Well, certainly I have gone to websites that I just think are designed poorly. And what do I mean by designed poorly? Well, first and foremost, if your website isn't putting your best foot forward right away in terms of showing your work, I think you're in trouble. And I would say that most people are interested in you and your art because of the art itself. So I would highly recommend that people are seeing one good picture on your homepage or a series of thumbnails that immediately gives them a sense of the work that you do. This sounds so obvious, but you would be surprised at how many sites I go to where I'm looking around for the gallery. I'm saying, where is this person's art? If I have to click once, twice, 3 times to find a piece of your work, I think the site does not work. So the first level of it is show your art. Okay, further down the path of design, what I think can really be a problem, and often I would call this amateurish design, but I would say if you have a distracting site, a site that's really going to take away from your work, or if I'm going to tend to look more at your site design or elements on your site than I am at your actual art, again, I think you're in trouble, like flashing things that say, read this or look over here or that kind of thing. Or even a site that's poorly designed in terms of having multiple fonts or different color fonts or different tables that are poorly organized. I think that's going to send a message to your audience that you're really not a professional, and it's going to put you in a situation of not being able to command as high of a price for your art, because the message will be, oh, this is an amateur. And I don't think that's ever a good thing to say to the marketplace. I want to get into a third area here, which is usability. And this is, what you want to do when your site is designed, you want to make sure that people can find and get what they want beyond your art. And again, a lot of people end up coming up with, I think, very creative designs for their site, and it's kind of neat, but sometimes I look at it and I can't figure out, well, where's the bio? Where is the artist statement? How can I find a resume? What galleries are you showing at? These seem to be really obvious questions. If I have to spend a lot of time hunting around on your website to get answers to those questions, I think the site is ineffective. You have to understand how users go to websites. I mean, even look at yourself. It's generally we're clicking around and looking at things really quickly. If we can't find things, we tend to go somewhere else because we just don't get it. And the watch phrase for website design is, don't make me think. So when somebody's coming to your website, don't force them to think. What you want them to do is look at your art and go through a path of seeing all the information and hearing your whole story in a very simple way. Now, obvious things for poor usability, I would say, is not having, you know, when I speak of navigation, that means the list of items that enables me to get to different pages on the site. You have to have your navigation easily visible from every page. So if I go to a page and it doesn't give me an opportunity to go to all the other pages from that page, that's a problem. I would say I would tend to put that navigation on the top and on the left or on the right. A lot of people end up putting them at the bottom of the page. I really don't recommend that at all. I think that makes it a more difficult experience for the user. Additionally, you want to choose very carefully what is on your navigation. And again, I would say the usually obvious things. They're the home page, your various galleries for showing your work, your bio, sometimes you would separate bio, resume, artist statement, a way to contact you, another page devoted to the gallery or any galleries where you show or any representation that you have, and upcoming events that may be happening. So you want to make, what I'm saying, design, the bottom line with design is this showing your work well, and is the experience easy for somebody visiting your site? And that's what you want it to be. And I've said that before, I think, on the panel. If somebody comes to your website and they say, wow, what a really cool website design, to me, I would say that's not really what you want to hear. What you want to hear is, wow, what great art you have. So what's your website? Don't focus on the website design. Focus on the art and the best possible way of showing your art, okay? So that's design. Second, your work, okay? And this is sort of a subset of design. But another reason why artist websites that I go to don't really work well are that the photographs are not good. And again, if you're presenting yourself as a professional artist or if you have ambitions to get into a gallery or museum, you've either got to become very good at taking photographs yourself or you've got to hire somebody or barter with somebody who can take photographs. I can't underestimate the value of this. Having good photographs of your work can make all the difference. And even though you know what it looks like somewhere else, many people will look at your photographs or at pictures of your art. Many more people will look at pictures of your art than will actually look at your art. So it's really worth putting a lot of attention into getting just the right pictures. Okay, the other thing is, and a nice thing on the web is when you show your, when you have pictures of your art, you've got to put them kind of in the right frame. And I tend to always recommend white, black, or gray as a background color. So I find, surprisingly, a lot of people put pictures of their work on a background that is, you know, I don't know, red or brown or something like that, that surprisingly ends up taking away from making the work look good and exciting. And I have seen this where I've taken an artist's website. I remember it was done in sort of a burnt sienna color. We took it, and when I saw it on the burnt sienna, I thought, wow, this artist isn't really good. I took the site, put all of those images on a black background, and suddenly I got excited about the art. Okay, the important thing is to experiment with backgrounds that are going to show your work in the best possible light. Now, again, I recommend white, black, or gray. I'm not saying that other colors won't work. Sometimes you might find that another color really is the best way to show it. But my experience is, in most cases, white, black, or gray is going to be the most effective thing. So there are two points there. It's having good photos of your work and then having them framed properly within your website so it really shows how good they are. Okay, then now we're going to go into the third piece, which is your website traffic. This is a huge issue for people, and I know through this telesummit you've been hearing lots of recommendations on how to get website traffic, which may be overwhelming. I find in many cases that people are not even doing the most basic things in order to get website traffic. If you're not doing the most basic things, you shouldn't be thinking about creating a video for YouTube. What you need to do is go back to the basics. And I'd say, and the basics are often not very technical. And here's some really quick tips. It's if you're an artist, you have an answering machine at home and on your voicemail, you'd say, "Hi, I'm Steve White. You can see my work at stevewhite.com. I mean, it sounds like a minor thing, but you never know who calls, and you're going to be getting the news out there that you do have a website, and you would be surprised at how many people go to that based upon something as simple as that. And you don't have to be a technical genius to figure out how to do that kind of thing. So particularly if you have a studio phone, a studio voicemail, that's great. Be sending people to your website. So the idea on site traffic, you're just thinking in general, just your all of your personal connections, making sure that they are aware of your website is the first step. And if you aren't dealing with that, don't be dealing with the more technical things. A little bit more technical is the signature files on the email. We say this a lot, but I'm still surprised at how many artists I hear from that don't give me their website address at the bottom of their email. And I think no matter what email program you're using, if you're using AOL or if you're using Outlook or a variety of other tools, all of them, I have never seen one that doesn't allow you to put in a signature file that gets automatically attached to every email you send out. Now, if you say, "I can't figure this out, I can't figure out how to do it," well, it's really not that hard and usually only takes a couple steps, and you really shouldn't be thinking about a lot more technical stuff if you can't figure that one out. Third, less technical, is including domain name, your domain name, in other words, stevewhite.com, for example, on all printed material. Again, it would seem obvious, but something like a business card or any sort of stationery that you use, all of that, just make sure that you're using the domain name. And ideally, I would say, you should also be using an email address that includes your domain name in it. So it would be steve@steve-white.com. And again, that's an advertisement that that website exists. If you use, you know, funartist@aol.com, that doesn't give any indication that you actually have a website. Fourth on my list is postcards. I think postcards to your existing mailing list, if you have one, I think postcards are one of the best ways anyway outside of the Internet to promote your work. I would tend to use them to promote stuff happening on your website. So you have a picture postcard you send out and announce a new gallery or a new series. Let's say you created some new work or you're showing all of the work you created in 2006. Promote a show on your website. This is really not that hard to do. And assuming you have that on your website, just create the postcard, send it out. That's going to generate traffic for you. And if people like it, they're going to be telling other people about it to go see that. And lastly, on the less technical side of things, I would recommend to you that you include your domain name in press releases and media coverage. Now, again, that would seem like an obvious thing, but let's say you're getting interviewed by a newspaper. What you want to do is before the whole interview process, you want to make a list before of things that you have to say to the reporter who is talking to you. And you've really got to put it at the top of your list. Make sure to get my domain name in the newspaper. And I can't tell you how many times I've seen little articles in the Saturday or Sunday section on artists, and the first thing I do is look for their domain name so I can really see all of their work online. Many times I find no indication at all that exists, and there's no way I can see more about what that artist is up to. So that's a very important thing. Okay, we're still on site traffic. Let's get a little bit into the more technical pieces of site traffic. Okay, what a lot of people talk about is search engine optimization, which is a big phrase, and there are many things that people can do there, many of which are quite technical, and it's a changing game. I say, if you have a limited amount of time that you want to spend on this kind of thing, probably the most important thing you can do is try to come up with a key phrase that you want to attract people for. Now, you know, if you're more advanced in search engine marketing, people would say, oh, no, come up with 5 key phrases. Well, I'm saying, let's at first just focus on one. And I would think you put together 2 or 3 words that you find people are searching for in order to and to attract that traffic. So an example of a key phrase would be something like Santa Fe landscape painter. Okay, the first thing you want to do is, and if people, Ariane, I'll give you an address where people can research this. First, you want to test the phrase and see if anybody is looking for that phrase. Okay, let's assume that a certain number of people are looking for a Santa Fe landscape painter. Okay, you're going to say, that's my key phrase. And what you're going to want to do is make sure that you're using that phrase throughout the site and that you are optimizing for that. Okay, and optimizing involves a lot of different technical pieces that I'm going to get into in a minute. But what I find that many people do is say, well, I want to come up on the top of search engines. But in many times, they don't know what phrase they want to come to the top of search engines for. And that's why I'm saying, hey, do your research here. You know, figure out what your goal is and what the phrase might be. I would say to artists, beyond that key phrase, there are other things that are important. Obviously, you always want your name to come up. So your name as an artist is really your brand, And my experience with that is that's really not very hard to accomplish, assuming that your name is relatively unique. Unfortunately, a name like mine, Steve White, is very common. It's very hard to come to this top of search engines for that. But in most cases, people have names that are somewhat unusual. Even it, unless your website is really poorly designed, you're probably going to have success coming up for your name. So I would tend not to worry about that as much. If you look and you find that your site has been up for 6 months or a year and you're still not coming up for your name, there's probably a real problem with how your site was designed, okay? And that gets into, on a more technical piece of it, the biggest problem that I see on poor site design is that people's sites are designed using a technology called frames, okay? And a frame is a, without getting into the technical pieces of it, let me just say that it's not good for search engines. So what you need to do is find out from, if you have a web designer or anybody, find out if your site has frames on it. If it does, you need to figure out another solution because that's not working for you, okay? Another reason why a site may not come up on search engines at all is because it's designed in Flash, okay? And Flash is it's a beautiful technology. The most beautiful sites that I've seen out there are designed in Flash. However, search engines cannot read Flash, and it's really going to hurt you on search engine positioning. Now, search engine positioning is not important for everybody, but if it is important for you, then Flash is not a good option, okay? Thirdly, let's talk about a few of the things that are important in search engine optimization on your site, and that is different things you can actually do on the way the pages are designed. There are probably about 10 different tags that you want to be, and tags means code on the page that need to be addressed in the proper way using your key phrase that we picked before plus your name so you come up properly on search engines. The most important of those, and again, I'm going top level with this, is make sure your title and where your title appears on your page is not actually in the web page. It's actually at the bar on the top of the web page. That's where the title is. That is a very important thing for search engines. I find many artists have sites where their homepage, when I look at what the title tag is, it says untitled document. That is very bad, and that's going to hurt you with search engine positioning. The second thing is header tags, which are also called H1 tags. You've really, if you have a web designer, or even if you get involved in web design at the most rudimentary level, H1 tags are really critical for search engines. Okay, that's a little bit more technical. I'm not going to go too, you know, that's as far as I'm going to go on the technical side of that. But frankly, if you just address this at the top level, you're going to be ahead of 95% of the people out there. And you know what? That's pretty darn good. Okay, the fourth area in the more technical pieces of this is what search engines really value very highly, and that's links to your website. Okay, this is not links on your website to other websites. This is links on websites that are not your own back to your website. Okay, and many people have made different recommendations about this. You'd say, well, why is this important? And I'll tell you why, because a search engine like Google ranks sites based a lot on who is linking to them, because they'd say, hey, if a bunch of other sites are out there are linking to your website, well, then your website must be pretty important. And that's the logic behind it. Google values this linking more than any of the other search engines, but all the search engines value it. So this is something very important. And so you'll say, well, that's fine, Steve, but I have no control over other websites and whether or not they are linking to me. And I would argue that that's not exactly right. And there are different things that you could do out there that will get links back to you. And in the panel, and I think in other groups here, you have heard this list of things, one of them being YouTube. If you actually did do a video, you could put a link on YouTube back to your site. The other ones are MySpace, eBay, getting press releases. There are a number of different artist directories out there where you can list your site. I was told about one this morning that I wasn't familiar with, and it's called fineartamerica.com. Okay, you can go there and post yourself as an artist. You can actually put up images of your work and then create a link that goes back to your website. I'm telling you, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do this. This is very simple for you, and if you're not willing to take that kind of simple step, then, you know, I think you're going to have a problem with this. But you don't have to create a video or any of that. If you've already got images of your site, you can post them there. Absolute Arts has the same kind of thing, an artist directory. When those links appear on those sites, they're linking back to your site. Again, that's going to increase your importance at Google and other search engines, okay? And there are other ones that people have mentioned, Craigslist, different posting things on message boards. And, of course, the big bugaboo that everybody recommends this day is a blog, is creating your own blog and on that blog posting images and linking back to your website. And as people say, search engines love blogs. And why do they like blogs? Because usually the items on the blogs are current. They're dated. There's always new stuff there. It's very fresh. And they know it's not going to be a site where nothing has been changed for 5 years. So it tends to be more interesting. A blog is very easy to create, but I think you really have to evaluate whether you're going to be spending once or twice a week adding new items to your blog. You have to evaluate that for yourself. I find that many people start blogs, but not many people continue blogs. But so a blog is a little bit more of a commitment. But going to fineartamerica.com today and posting yourself as an artist and posting some of your work is a one-time effort that is going to begin to make a difference on your website. I would say with this search engine stuff, there isn't one thing that you can do that changes everything. It's picking a number of different things and adding them together, and that ends up creating more traffic. I have rarely heard somebody that said, I did one thing and that made all the difference. Usually it's taking 5 or 10 different pieces and doing those things. Lastly, in this area of site traffic, I would always recommend to people, if you can, to have an email list. I think anytime you add a bunch of new images to your site, that it's critical that you send out to your email list and say, hey, check out what's on my site. And ideally, that email will include a representative image, okay? So that people have a sense of what's there. And that way you just want to get people used to the idea of going to your site. Okay, that's site traffic. That's a very big area. I see we're about a half an hour in here, and I still have a few more areas, so let me see if I can buzz through some of these. The fourth area is sales, and that's the idea of how do you convert people from being visitors to people who actually buy your work. And I think you really have to think through, why do people buy your work? Most obviously, your work's got to show off well, and we covered how to do that. Secondly, I think your credibility in terms of what's your training, you know, where are you from, that kind of thing. If you, you need that on your site. Another thing that's very important is establishing your level in the art world. If you show in galleries, make sure we know about that. If you've been in a museum show or won a jury show. Make sure we know about that. The idea here is put your best foot forward. You've probably got about 30 seconds to convince me that you are worthwhile as an artist. So there's no time to be modest. You've really got to put your best foot forward. And I'm telling you, doing that on your website is a lot easier than doing it in person. And frankly, if I'm looking at an artist's work and they've had a show or they've shown work or have a work in the MoMA collection, I want to know about it because it's going to make me think differently about who they are. And lastly on this sales piece is, I can't tell you enough how important I think it is that an artist establishes their story. What is unique about you, whether it's your process, your background, your subject. I want to know, I want something beyond the art that you create that's really giving me a sense of you as a unique individual. That's the way I'm going to remember you. Because I might say, hey, I saw a really cool work from an artist at a show, and or I saw a really cool work on a website, and also this artist developed this work based on their experience in Afghanistan. And that becomes a hook for me to be able to remember you and think about you in the future. So spend some time thinking about what your story is. Fifth in this section is what I call next steps, getting people to take next steps on your site that are valuable to you as an artist. And most people set up a site, people go look at it, and then they leave. That's not bad, but you really want to have some way to connect with them in the future. So think about what do you want them to do? Get on your mailing list, subscribe to an email list, come to an upcoming gallery show, or call you up for a studio visit. Those are just some examples, okay? You want your website to push people in that direction of actually taking a next step to engage with you in some way. And if all you do is show your work, that's all they're going to do is look at it and leave, and you won't know who they are, and you won't have a way to connect with them in the future. Six, think about getting people to return to your site. And this is obvious. Change your images on your site and then promote the changes and then encourage people through emails to go back to it. Now, I'm not going to tell you to, you know, go back to my site. It's the same as it was 5 years ago. So that's just not very appealing. But if you say, you know what, I'm changing my site. Every time I create a new work, I put an image of it on my website. Then I'm going to be much more interested in going to your site to see what you're up to. So think about why people are going to return. They're not going to return to see the same thing over and over again. Okay, the last area is just the area of cost or dollars spent. And I would say, I think with all of the tools out there now, then an artist should not be spending any more than $300 a year for their website. They probably shouldn't be paying any more than $500 for setting it up or getting it designed initially. There are so many tools out there. And what's really critical is that once you have a website, even though you're not very technical, you should be able to manage it yourself. And managing it yourself means you should be able to change the text and load new images. And there are many tools out there, and I would say, let me go through, and it depends on your level of technical expertise. Obviously, if you're a hotshot, you can learn FrontPage or Dreamweaver. My guess is if you know those, you probably aren't on this call. You already know all that you need to know about that. I was just turned on yesterday to another website called homestead.com that I was very impressed with, and I don't know if Catherine Holmes turned me onto it. I don't know if she's on this call now. But I would say if you're good at manipulating images, you know how to use Photoshop or something like that, look at the websites that they have there. They have the ability to show galleries, to sell things from your site, all for $20 a month, and you can go in there and change them yourself. doesn't require a whole lot of technical expertise. You don't need to know HTML and all that kind of stuff, but you do need to be able to manipulate images using software like Photoshop. At a more basic level, where you really don't have to know anything except how to use a browser and find images on your computer, I would say two places I would recommend. One, FolioLink.com, I think is nice. I've looked at it. Some I think is complicated. The other one that I'm involved in, because I developed it, can be found at ArtistCube.com. So that's kind of a self-promotion in there, and we sell websites where people can upload their own images and all of that. If all of this seems overwhelming to you, you're going to have to hire your own designer, and then they're going to have to make the changes for you. And I'm telling you, it's unless you can find a kid to make those changes for minimum wage, is probably, if you're making regular changes on your site, that's going to end up adding up and being too expensive for you. Anyway, I've gotten through my list, Ariane. I don't know if you're still there, but maybe...
Oh, I'm here, Steve, absolutely.
I can't believe I got through all that.
No, you did great. Thank you so much. You actually got through in pretty much record time. I know a fair amount about websites, but I love some of your comments today. This is really helpful. Okay, I'm going to open up the lines, and if you have a question... Remember to hit *6 to unmute yourself. Say your name first so I can acknowledge you. That means I hear you. Hold on. All right. Are there questions for Steve?
Yes.
Who's speaking, please?
Susan Romero.
Susan, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I know you touched on this before. I thought it was you. But one of the questions I have is I paint and I sculpt. I also do a variety of subject matter. I thought you suggested that you should have another website, a separate website for your sculptures. Do you still stay with that, or do you have another suggestion?
You must think I'm very fickle, huh? No, I'm sticking to my guns on that one. I think that the difficult thing is, of course, is that, as an artist, how much time do you want to be devoting to the Internet rather than creating your own work? I would say for one individual to have more than one website is quite a commitment. But my argument is it's better to have one focused and good website than it is having one website that combines a bunch of different markets and different ways of working. I tend to, customers of mine, that's what I advise them. I'd say, you know what, this is pick where you think you have a future on the Internet and stick with that niche. And my experience has proven that's what works.
Okay.
I'm going to jump in for a quick second here and just add something to that. What works, too, is that you can pick the one where you think you're going to get the greatest cash flow immediately or initially or with growth, and then down the road you can add your second one.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that.
And I'll give you a metaphor for that. Is in the dot-com era that somebody said this, it really changed my thinking about it. He said there are two different kinds of website design. One is where you have lots of different things that are all, seem like they're kind of good. And we would call that the bundle of sticks. And the other approach is having one thing that is really good and really works well, and that's a sharp knife, okay? And a sharp knife works a lot better than a bundle of sticks on the Internet.
Okay, thank you. All right. You can go back and hit yourself with *6 to mute yourself, and we'll take another question.
I have a question. My name's Paige Bradley.
Paige, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm all for putting my name on our artist registries and other websites to get people to search back to my website. However, I have found that some artist registries are more craft-oriented than others, less museum quality, and then some of them you just can't get into until the gallery actually, signs up and puts your name on there. Have you noticed that they're totally different standards for some of these things?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, and I know you had sent me an email earlier, Paige, right?
Yeah.
And you have a very nice site and all of that. I would say, they control... what they're doing. So somebody may start a directory and make it for free and have it, a free-for-all, on there. and then they get 1,000 artists, and they say, okay, this is what we needed as a base, and now we're going to start charging, or now we're going to, you know, divide it up into different things, or, you know, make it more professional. You know, people can change their models, so...
I guess I'm more concerned, is it going to come back and affect me like I did an ad in a really bad magazine type of thing?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't think so.
Okay.
I mean, basically, what you want to do is make sure that, you know, your work is presented with integrity there. And I think the link is good. And frankly, somebody may be looking at crafts and end up seeing some of your work and say, wow, I guess I like bronze more than crafts, you know, or whatever. I really can't see how you can lose.
Okay, good.
I agree with Steve. I think also we need to keep in mind that this entire engine of the Internet and the World Wide Web is really emerging. I mean, it's been around long enough we think it's kind of a known commodity, but it's not.
Yeah.
And things are changing all the time. The key is to kind of stay on top of the way the changes are happening. We just can't guess where it's going to go next. And the galleries, I want to remind everybody something that nobody really knows about. The galleries are often as far behind the eight ball with all of this Internet stuff as the artist community can be. They, too, have not caught up really well, and a handful have figured it out, but a lot more of them are still stuck in what I call the old world paradigm, and they're just trying to marry the old world paradigm with this new world, and it doesn't work that way.
I've totally seen that. I mean, they usually have a storefront mentality. I mean, they're
yes.
thinking about foot traffic, and
yes.
the Internet is, what? You know, what are you talking about? Because but often they have found that ultimately when a work sells for them, somebody walks into their gallery and writes a big check. So that's what they're most interested in, where that may not be what necessarily works for you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, another artist, you want to ask a question?
I have a question.
Yes, your name?
I'm Diana in Colorado.
Okay,
right.
Diana, go ahead.
I just
yes,
had a very...
I didn't know about a counter on your...
Okay, we're having trouble hearing you. There's an echo.
Okay. Can
I'm
you hear
sorry.
Me now? I think somebody
okay,
else was asking
every, hang on just a
well.
Second. Could everybody except Diana mute themselves back to star six, and then you can try again? Thank you. My goodness, there were a lot of questions there, too, Diana.
I was just wondering, Steve, you mentioned, again, this goes back to linking my website to other websites.
Yes.
How can you give me a tip on just even how to start that process? Is there something that I click on to make that happen? Do I go to, for instance, fineartamerica.com first and then do it, or do I go to my website?
Yeah, well, you have a website currently, right?
Correct.
Okay, so what I would do, yeah, go to fineartamerica.com, mm-hmm. and there'll be an artist directory in there, which you can click around and find it, and then somewhere it's going to say, submit your own stuff, and then there will be a form which you fill out. It's really that's step one. Now I haven't.
Wait, Steve, hang on just a second. I think I understand where her confusion is.
Okay.
The link is your website address. That is the link.
Oh.
So that http://www. Whatever your website is, that's the link, and you will be entering that entire and enter all of it unless they have HTTPP already in the form. That's what you're putting in the form that creates the link.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. Thank you, Ariane, for doing that.
I realized
that.
It was really basic.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
Okay,
that's not
yeah,
very clear. I wasn't very clear.
Well,
that's okay.
I would
good.
Say,
good question. A lot of people aren't clear on these real basics, and we move ahead and don't realize we've lost somebody. Thank
well,
you.
Well, and Ariane's little tip at the end of that is really worth paying attention to. Make sure the full address is there, because if you don't put the http://, and they don't have it, the link to your website is not going to work.
It isn't what's called live, a live link.
Yeah.
It's just informational. The www dot after that, that's just information. What makes the link come alive is the http://.
Yeah.
Great.
Thank you very
okay.
much.
You're welcome. Can you do star six now? And, okay, we'll try. We'll take one more, and then
hello.
We're going to go
this
for break.
Is,
hello.
Yes, this is
Doris. Okay,
Doris.
I'm sorry.
I have
Doris was the only one whose name I actually heard. But listen, don't panic, everybody else. you can send your questions by email. And if I can answer them, I won't send them to Steve. And if I can't, I'll send them to Steve. So everybody but Doris, go back to star six.
Okay,
go ahead.
The question is that we want people to buy on our website. And I'm wondering about PayPal and how to make it inviting for people to buy. I mean, how commercial do you want to get as far as putting this, your email address on each page, or, you know, when you get to the place where you can buy? I want to know about that.
Well, PayPal is great. The nicest thing about PayPal is it's very cheap to get involved with it, and pretty simple to enable on.
Oh, you really?
City, somebody speak up.
Big City.
Excuse me, can you please mute yourself to star six? We're talking with one artist right now.
It's pretty simple to implement. I think there's more of that strategic marketing choice. So I would tend to say that people are showing work in galleries and, or trying to get galleries or things like that, that adding commerce to your site where you're trying to get people to do transactions where they're buying prints or postcards or things like that nature, you may be shooting yourself in the foot. So you have to, you know, that strategic decision of how commercial you want to get, I think you've really got to think through in terms of your market. I would say that if you find that you have a larger consumer audience and you're selling work of either prints or cards or whatever it is in the, you know, $100 and range or below, I think commerce can be a really good opportunity for you. And then in addition to doing PayPal and all of that, I think you want to start to go down the eBay path. And things like that. And there's another expert on the Telesummit on eBay that I think you really want to be paying attention to. But it's kind of a strategic marketing decision. It's not a technical decision.
Absolutely. And Steve, I'm going to be addressing that tomorrow more extensively.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, you know, make sure to listen to Arion tomorrow.
Steve, thank you so much. We're going to go on to the break now. We'll come back in 13 minutes because we've gone over a little bit for the last keynote of day 5 with Alita Dewal. Put your feet up or down, shake out the clutter, and come back fresh. See you in 13.
Bye, everyone.